If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus rather than a war.
We are asking the American public to work with us to prepare in the expectation that this could be bad.
The sudden spike leading Italy's prime minister to take what he calls dramatic measures.
COVID-19 forced the prime minister to chair the emergency meeting on the pandemic via video link. From tomorrow, he'll also be communicating by letter, warning every British household the outbreak will get worse before it gets better, and stricter controls may have to come into force.
Nearly 1,000 people have died in the past 24 hours.
779 people have died in just the past 24 hours.
We are going into a global recession.
More than 2,000 coronavirus deaths in a single day.
There was a warning today that it could take up to 6 months before life in the UK returns to normal.
In December of 2019, a new type of coronavirus, now named COVID-19, was first identified in the Hubei province of China. Since that date, over 3 billion people, nearly half of the population of the world, have been forced into some form of government-imposed isolation. From India to the US, governments across the planet have taken extreme measures on a scale that has never been seen before. Whole nations have been put on lockdown. Schools have been closed, businesses forced to shut their doors, and normally busy streets now resemble ghost towns. Panic-stricken citizens have left supermarket shelves bare, leaving many essential items in short supply as mass hysteria spreads, and the world-changing nature of the situation begins to hit home. Despite the constant stream of reports from both governments and global media, many have been left in a state of confusion about the uncertain future that lies ahead. So what exactly is taking place? Are we really facing a worldwide pandemic that has the potential to leave millions dead in its wake? Or is there something else going on?
This is a police message. You must stay indoors. This is a police message.
This is just the beginning. This is just an attempt to freeze everything in place.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there we go. Let me pause there. There you go. A little bit of a sneak peek. Well, not a sneak peek. It's out. The video is out. But a little bit of a sample here from our guest today. Our guest is joining us here. His latest video on the coronavirus, Mimish Brunner. Actually, he's been on the show twice before. He went by the name of Phil Simpson, but you might know him better as Mimish Brunner. It's great to have you back. How's it going over there on your side of things?
It's good to be here, Henrik, and it's going very well. We've just got that video out there that you put a bit of a clip on, and that's on our second channel, just so people understand, because it might be a little bit confusing. We've got a second channel called Mimmer's Council. Mimmer's Council is for more political content, or more politically overt content.
Yeah, that's right. Last time you were on, we of course talked about some of the main content from Mimish Brunner, which was of course more, you know, pre-Christian in origin and stuff like that. A lot of good things, a lot of fascinating stuff about the Kimbri, the Gothic people, the Viking age, and that kind of stuff. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
I know many of our audience are enjoying your material greatly. But hey, actually, let me do a couple of formalities, I guess, ladies and gentlemen, before we dive in here and talk about what's going on here with the corona. Virus here for today. Hope you are doing well wherever you're joining us from. Hope you're not too bad of a state when it comes to the quarantine and the lockdown and everything. Hope you can get outside, get some fresh air. Of course, vitamin D, one of the most important things that we can actually have and produce in sunlight if you want to fight this disease that's supposedly ravaging the planet right now. But yeah, thank you for joining us live. If you're joining us on DLive, we're also going out on VK and Twitter at the same time, and of course to our website, redice.tv. Special shout out if you're joining us on the members' website, redicemembers.com. Thank you for your support. We can't do this without you, so thank you for being there for us. But yeah, otherwise, of course, we've got archive-wise, we've got on BitChute, Library. You can watch it later on VK and a number of other places as well. But yeah, so Phil, I guess I'll just call you Mimish Brunner. It's easier that way. A lot of stuff to get into today. Tell us a little bit of when you saw that things were amiss, because we kind of followed somewhat of a similar trajectory, if you will, when it comes to like monitoring what happened. My initial stage, and I've been spoken about this many times, but it was essentially like, in the beginning, I was like, close to border, this looks really bad, this is, you know, we don't want this in our countries. And I still think that that obviously would have been the best strategy, would have been the most sane strategy. We would have prevented misery, death, economic shutdown, lockdowns, quarantines, all these kinds of things with it. That didn't happen. Yeah. And then we've seen, I think, a shift where in the media, for example, initially, largely over the West, were like very, it's fine, go out and hug a Chinese person. Don't worry about it. It's all fine too. But basically, like, once it was in our countries, it was like, holy shit. Like, we have to lock everything down, put everyone in quarantine. It's been crazy to see this flip. But when did you start reacting to it, that something was felt amiss, or however you want to term that?
Well, at first, I actually didn't think much of it. I mean, we've had H1N1, bird flu, swine flu. I mean, you name it. We've had every type of... I think I seen a funny post a few days ago where people go, you know, about how many end of the world scenarios they survived in the last 10 years. So at first I thought it might be another one of those, you know, blow over, they try to push vaccines, et cetera, type of scenarios. But then I started seeing how people were reacting to it. And it started to get a bit freaky. But I mean, I agree with you. As we point out in that video that you showed the beginning of there, when it was considered at the very beginning of a deadly virus, when we had limited information, people put on it, like the health bodies in the UK put on it HCID, high consequence infectious disease. At that point, we didn't lock down the borders at all. In fact,
no,
we let everybody come in and nobody changed. As soon as we removed that status, so as soon as they decided that it wasn't as deadly as it was before, they removed that status. Then we had the lockdown, and then I started to get it. Then we started to take it a lot more seriously over here. So, me and Rhys, who work on Mimersbrunn, decided to do a video, and we got a help from a few friends over, because Mimers Council was a way not just to be political, but to add more new voices into it. So my friends Steed and Adric, and they helped me do some research for it. And it was meant to be a feature length piece, but as you realized, it's so much there. It was about 4 hours long.
I know. It's every show since, what is it now, must be 2 months, bordering on 2 months, I think. Every single show has been dominated by this topic, which is, of course, partially because everything else is shut down. There's not much else happening, you know, so that's kind of it, right? But there's been such a dramatic just transformation so quickly of society and the expectations of what we're supposedly are to do and stuff like that, and how, you know, how bad this really is. And you know, again, it's like, I don't know, the flip happened kind of, I'm not quite sure when, but it was when I noticed that the media was starting to take a different twist on things. And the initial reports, even by someone like Anthony Fauci himself from over in, you know, CDC, the main guy of infectious diseases and stuff like that, that they've been hauling forward now in the media. I mean, he and I've referenced it many times, but he wrote himself in the New England Journal of Medicine back in March 26th. I think it was March 16th, actually. He said it had a mortality rate of about 0.1%. And then, you know, in the meantime, we've heard all these other scenarios of, like, you know, Italy was, what, as high as 6 or 8% or whatever. But the reality is we haven't tested everybody, so we don't know the mortality rate. These are based on models and based on actually crappy models at that. And when the U.S. and the U.K. started shifting strategy was after Neil Ferguson at the Imperial College over in the U.K. did his modeling. And he was like, he predicted about 2.2 million people dead in the U.S. if nothing was done, about 500,000 in the U.K. And this is the same guy. Again, I've referenced this a couple of times, but it's good to go over this again because we do need to repeat things over and over again. This guy was behind the sham of foot and mouth disease. He was what was the record again? Let me see. I didn't actually pull it up. Let me pull it up, and I'll reference this real quick here, guys, because this is important to do. Let me pause this. Let me read this too. I've showed it a couple of times, but this is very important. So here's Neil Ferguson right here, this guy. They did their report. Again, it's the reason why Sweden did not go down this route of lockdown, because Sweden's main immunologist Agnes Tegnell, he basically said, this paper has not been peer-reviewed, this is not standard procedure, we're not going to go about doing what every other country has done, which, I'm again, I've referenced this, but I'm glad they did. So here it is again. I've read it a few times, so sorry if it's a repeat for you guys, but very important to go over this. Professor Ferguson is at the European Reference for Epidemic Modeling, or he's still, rather, at that European Reference for Epidemic Modeling, yet it was he who in 2001 convinced Prime Minister Tony Blair to have 6 million cattle slaughtered to stop the foot-and-mouth epidemic, a decision that cost £10 billion and is now considered an aberration. In 2002, he calculated that mad cow disease would kill about 50,000 British people and another 150,000 when transmitted to sheep. There were actually 177. In 2005, he predicted that bird flu would kill 65,000 Britons. There were a total of 457. So this guy has a notorious track record of getting things wrong. Why is anybody listening to this charlatan?
Exactly. I mean, we do link him in there in the video because he said up to two thirds could be, but that was something we like to do is link their sources, their people. So then if they say that we're lying, our information is bad, then theirs is too, right? So
yeah.
You don't want to do it. But one of the things, as you mentioned there, mortality rate, I mean, one of the things that's been affecting mortality rates, as you mentioned with Italy, well, Italy stopped testing anybody except for the extremely ill, which is going to bring the mortality rate up, right? Another thing Italy did, as you might have read, and actually the Office of National Statistics now backed this data up, that the people dying with it have serious underlying issues, underlying health issues.
Yes.
The Italy one was 99%. The Office of National Statistics did a bigger one because the Italy one was based on 370-ish patients. The Office of National Statistics did one on 4,000 deaths in the UK and found 91% had one or more underlying health conditions. And actually, both studies found that three or more was the average.
Yes, three or more. Yeah.
Yeah. And as I mentioned in the video that you linked there, these are not minor health issues either. These are heart disease, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, strokes. So remember, three or more of those. So when you take those into account with so these COVID deaths, what a lot of people don't realize either is that these COVID deaths are not necessarily caused by COVID-19. The Office of National Statistics in the UK, for example, marks them and describes them as such. Anywhere a death is calculated as a COVID death, anywhere that COVID-19 is mentioned on the death certificate, even if it is suspected. So all a doctor has to do is go, that guy had a cough, write COVID-19 down, and then that death. I mean, theoretically, you could have somebody get hit by a car, go to hospital, get tested for COVID-19, test positive, and then when they die, that death could fall into those statistics.
Yeah.
Now, that's an extreme case, but the very fact that that could happen shows you the problems we've got here.
And there has also been underlying other issues where there is financial incentive by hospitals themselves because they get paid. And you have that clip actually in the film. I thought we could pull out one more clip. And we're going to link the full video below. We're going to make sure that you guys can watch the whole thing. But I did take a couple of timestamps here from the video, about a 5-minute portion or so, around 14 minutes. Let's play that, and then I have two more after that, a bit shorter, but these are so good. And it summarizes the situation, a lot of the things that we've been kind of talking about and going over here the last few days. So let's go to, where are we here? 14:28. Let's check it out right from here, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. Oh, okay, let me turn this up here.
It's most likely to be a highly infectious
virus. That's from the beginning again. All right, let's try that again. Here we go. 14:28. Okay, here we go.
To act in such a situation. The current total of deaths estimated to be caused by COVID-19 is just over 114,000 worldwide as of the 13th of April 2020. Just to put that number in perspective, 17.9 million people die annually from heart disease. So in just a single month, it would be expected that heart disease would account for just under 1.5 million deaths worldwide. Now, some could put forward the argument that despite COVID-19 being active since at least late 2019 and has now spread to nearly every corner of the globe, we are still in the early stages of the outbreak. And as such, death tolls could be expected to rise exponentially. This has led to nearly every authority on the planet making predictions on the final death toll of the virus. The media, as is to be expected, constantly present these numbers with little to no questioning. This is despite the predictions changing daily, and in many cases, differing vastly from one to another. At the end of March, the White House predicted 100 to 220,000 would die from COVID-19 in the US. Now, White House officials believe that number to be closer to 60,000. But even the original prediction still pales in comparison to heart disease, for example, which in the US alone kills 650,000 annually. Or even something like cancer, which claims 600,000 American lives each year.
Shit.
So even if we take all the numbers at face value and allow ourselves to accept the highly speculative predictions and forget comments like that of Neil Ferguson, who stated that as many as two-thirds of all COVID-19 deaths may have occurred anyway, COVID-19 has a potential fatality rate only one-tenth of the yearly fatality rates of heart disease or cancer. Of course, even if we accept this number of 60,000 possible deaths in the US, we are not for one second saying such a death toll would be a good thing. But it does beg the question. If the American government, like so many across the world, are willing to shut down their entire nations, costing billions and disrupting the lives of every single citizen because of COVID-19's potential to kill, why do they not act with the same zeal when facing diseases with proven fatality rates far greater?
Yep, it's true.
To put this into perspective, because of the mass disruption caused to daily life in the US, the Senate passed a $2 trillion aid bill to help workers and businesses cope in the lockdown. In comparison, public funding in the US for cardiovascular research is around $2 billion yearly. And Dr. Margaret Kumo stated about cancer funding, "More than 40 years after the war on cancer was declared, we have spent billions fighting the good fight. The National Cancer Institute has spent some $90 billion on research and treatment during that time." Just a reminder here too, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. So the aid budget of $2 trillion passed by the US Senate is equivalent to over 22 times the total spending by the National Cancer Institute in over 40 years.
Jeez. Yep.
So if the US government really cared about the health of its citizens, would it not take such drastic action against cardiovascular disease? Of course, heart disease,
I love this
unlike
bit.
A virus,
and,
is
Buff
not contagious.
Is great.
But it is preventable. And we know many of its causes. For example, fast food has long been associated with heart disease. So if governments are willing to shut down entire nations because of the threat of coronavirus, would it not also be acceptable then, in the interest of preventing death, that we would at least shut down all fast food restaurants?
Yep, a good point.
Of course, such extreme measures would never even be suggested. And despite health concerns regarding fast food, chains like McDonald's freely operate within children's hospitals in the US.
That's right. All right, that's a good portion right there. Amazing. I mean, when you put it in perspective, just like, mm-hmm. what are the numbers that we are so hysterically, hysterically yeah. reacting to in this case, when you put it in perspective? And this has always been ridiculed kind of thing, but the fact is it's just the mortality rate is not high of this thing. What is the reason? Why? It's clear to me that they picked this because it was either an opportunity or something new that people hadn't really thought about that much or something. And I'm not saying nothing is going on. It kind of like what you said, that there are underlying health conditions, and this seems to be a bug. Similarly, like that there are other diseases that can push someone over the edge of mortality, so to speak, once they have
like
underlying. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it does, right? It pushes them over. And there's some weird things, but the fact is, and we have that clip later too, but the financial incentive is really important too. The hospitals are making money on this. If you actually put them on a ventilator, I think it was something like, was it $40,000 per patient? Or what was it?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, this
ridiculous.
Is more the US, obviously, but I'm sure,
right.
I mean, that's part of that $2.2 trillion, right? That's the aid budget, so that they're putting out there.
The CARE Act,
But I mean, there's other things to look at too. I mean, recently, and we're working on a video, we've got the script, and we're going to be hopefully getting this video out the weekend. There's been a spike in the week 14, week 15, and people are going, look, people are dying, because I think it's been, I believe there's 14,000 over normal deaths in the last 2 weeks in the UK. Now, but this spike looks very scary, and people look at it and people show it. If you say something about the virus not being deadly, they'll show you this little spike and they go, oh, look, you're talking rubbish. People are dying. So we're doing a little video on that. Because one third of those are not COVID-19 related, even by their own admission. So what I'm saying there is they're not even mentioned on the death certificate, speculative or not. This has actually prompted the Office of National Statistics to do some a probe into it, because there's something else causing these deaths. But in this video that we've got coming up, we go into some of the problems that can occur from isolation and from the fact that, as you've noticed, you may have seen all these nurses doing TikTok videos.
Oh, right? Yeah, the dance routines. Very
dancing in empty wards.
Yeah.
Well, for example, in the UK, A&E numbers are down 50%. Cancer screening numbers down dramatically. Diabetes UK put out an urgent warning saying anybody that thinks they've got symptoms of diabetes, or anybody that's already got diabetes that is worried about their health, don't put it off. And they actually had to say in their statement, the NHS is open, because nobody's going to the hospitals, because if they're ill, they don't want to catch the virus, because they've been hyped into this fear. And also, people, you know, might go, I feel a bit under the weather, but I'm not going to go in because I don't want to overburden the NHS, because obviously we're being told we're building mortuaries and extra hospitals everywhere, but our hospitals are empty. Like I say, they're seeing all-time lows across the board at the NHS. So what could be causing this death spike? Well, not only that, but there's also studies. I've started looking into the effects of isolation. So, you know, when an elderly person loses a partner, well, in those instances, they call it sudden abrupt isolation. It's a type of isolation where you instantly cut off, your world turns upside down. Well, what's happened with coronavirus, right? People have been shut off. People that were going to help people, visiting them, for example, to give them company, they're not allowed anymore. The Meals on Wheels guys that deliver food to the elderly, they're putting it on the doorstep and walking away. These people have got no company or companionship. Care homes, we've seen a spike in deaths at care homes where nobody's visiting these old people anymore. And remember, most people that are dying from this are over 80. Now, you cut off their lifeline to the real world. You tell them they can no longer see their son or grandchildren. And then you fill them full of fear on the TV about a lot of these people, as we know, and I've experienced it personally, I'm sure many people have, that when an older person in their family, like my great granddad who was 99, when he lost his wife, he died within the first few months.
Very common that happens.
Because it's a sudden abrupt change to their life. Now, so when we start taking all these factors in, the fact that people are not seeking medical attention when they might need it, the fact that isolation is giving, you know, the will to live is a important aspect in the elderly. And if they can't see their loved ones, I mean, some disgusting things. People are dying and they're not allowed to go and visit them.
I know. Like Michigan was one of these examples I heard. We're still doing like abortions and stuff, but you know, old people couldn't get knee surgery or hip replacement. Yeah. Like all these things have been put off, kind of thing. And in some cases, it's very serious kind of issues as well, actually. I mean, it's just crazy because, I mean, a lot of people kind of poo-poo that and stuff like that, but it should not be dismissed that stress and fear and anxiety are tremendously powerful in terms of actually knocking down your immunity. Like if you have let's say you have issues already you're struggling with, right? And then you add stress, anxiety, fear, whatever on top of that. Well, I mean, let's face it. What do people do? The majority are probably sitting at home watching the TV and following this thing like a soap opera, right? They're terrified. They're like, oh, people who are, I was said claustrophobic, but people who are like, you know,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
What's the word? I'm spacing on it, but it'll come to me. Hypochondriacs, right? They're hypochondriacs. They have issues, psychological issues. Or they have attention seeking things. They think I have it. I gotta go get tested and blah, 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 all these kinds of things. Like, you have other things beyond just like the nuts and bolt cold numbers that they can calculate with.
In the new video, we'll be showing some of the data on this. There's a lot of data. In fact, a massive meta study done by a lady in America who's testified in the House of in the Congress in the UK as an expert on isolation. In her meta study, she actually compares isolation, loneliness, to as big a killer as obesity.
Interesting.
Because it affects, and there was another study done by the National Institute of Aging in the US where they did a study on the effects of isolation. These are all previous, before this. This is a government-run study, and they concluded that it essentially inflates everything. Cancer cells grow faster, heart disease, inflammatory of the arteries gets worse, and your antiviral response is reduced.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay? This was all done previous to this. This is all proper studies done in the US mostly, but the meta study was done from all data from 1980 to 2014. It was a massive study taking in all these other studies. So when we bring all of that in, especially like I say, we can start to look at these numbers a little bit differently. And actually, we can even start to bring forward the case that the lockdown may be causing more deaths than the virus.
Unpack that a little bit for us. We've seen suicides. There's people that have, they kill themselves from it, like straight up. But
I mean, we'll be doing a video, but just to go through the fact that people, I mean, Diabetes UK sent out an urgent warning to people with diabetes because people are going, I feel under the weather. I feel a bit bad, but I don't want to burden, or especially for people with diabetes being warned to really isolate because they're at more risk.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not seeking medical attention. And these numbers have not been calculated yet. And when we look at the numbers of deaths, and we see that they have three or more of these health conditions, if one of them flares up now and they decide not to go to the doctors, these are severely ill people. They could die at home. Or die in a care home or die at hospital because they're allowing or seeking medical treatment too late. I mean, with diabetes, I know people with diabetes type 1. If theirs flares up and they go into, I forgot what it's called, one of those shocks, I mean, that's can put you into a coma or death. And that can be the matter of, you know, a few hours or a day of not getting medical attention.
Interesting. These issues too, there's apparently a lot of domestic violence have skyrocketed because a lot of people are not actually accustomed to being home with their spouse, 24/7, I guess, essentially, are discovering like, God, this person is really annoying. You know, and you have an emotionally abusive wife and then you might have a physical, who knows what direction this plays out, right? But I mean, still, it's part of the equation, right? More stress, more turmoil.
There are definitely more, but I think, the medical conditions and the studies on isolation definitely show. I mean, like I say, one of the studies showed that effect on antiviral. I mean, if it's a virus and you want people to get better from a virus, isolating them it's going to lower their immunity.
It is, absolutely. And I'm not trying to say, by the way, let me sneak that in. Yeah. I'm not trying to say that they're being killed by domestic, like they're dying of domestic. I'm just adding on as another layer of stress or commotion in their life kind of thing. But well, yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Also, to go back to your point of stress just quickly, a lot of people don't know how stress affects the immune system. Say you're going for an operation and you need your, you need a transplant, an organ transplant. Well, the hormone that is released in your body in stress because of the flight or flight syndrome is the very same hormone that they use to suppress your immunity in organ transplants.
Huh.
Yeah. So because fight or flight, what happens is if you're ill, you might feel under the weather and your body puts all of its energy into healing yourself, into your immune system. But if a wolf suddenly turns up, you don't need that. You need to push it into your muscles and leg it because the illness or not, the wolf's going to eat you, right? So when you're stressed, you're in fight or flight mode. So you shut off all your extra calories to your immune system and you pump it into your organs and reflex actions.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, so there's a lot of things here, a lot of variables to take into account, and things which are not being discussed. I think another layer to this, too, is just in terms of the numbers, is that most people, they don't sit and study just how many people just die around them, like every day, every month, every week, and from what, and from, you know, if we knew all the viruses that you had contracted and gotten, that you never noticed that you had, right? Mm-hmm. People would be freaking out. There would be like, you know, and especially if there was a media campaign to ramp up the fear around it, right? And again, it doesn't have to downplay anything. It's obviously something, you know, kind of happening here that pushes some people over that edge, as we said, but still. I don't know. It's just what I still can't figure out what or why the media flipped, because, again, in the beginning, they were, you know, World Health Organization. They failed us. Most leaders in the West all over, they failed us. No one took this seriously. No one said anything. And sure, partially China is to blame, but also our leaders are to blame for this. And they, you know, it's no human to human transfer. It's fine. Keep the borders open. Keep goods coming. You know, we got to keep the economy going. And then all of a sudden that shift happened. A switch.
Yeah.
Boom. Once it was in our countries and once effectively it had been like, I mean, again, we don't know how many people have it. We won't know until we do massive antibody testing. I believe that we'll probably see massively more people that have been infected with it than we actually so far knows. And also, Iceland did that one study, I referenced it in previous shows, where they have tested more than any other nation because, of course, there's a smaller population, there's more control there, they're advanced, they're a very efficient Nordic society, if you will. So they have tested the most of everybody, and was it up to 50% of those that have tested positives? And by the way, the PCR tests and all this stuff, many false positives. Many of these people say that you got to test 4 or 5 times because the string of RNA they've looked for is so small and so minute that they have to do cyclic replication of it, which is complicating the situations even more. But still, those that have tested positive for, if they are accurate positive tests, over 50% are asymptomatic, right? They're not showing any symptoms, right? Which, again, this drives down the death rate tremendously. And so we won't know until essentially we have everybody mapped and traced. But I guess that's part of the agenda, right? They actually want to trace everybody. They want to test everybody. They want to get us into a medical form of routine, which we never have done before, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the early preliminary, I forget where they were done now, but antibody studies, I suggest that it's at least 10 times less than what's showing, if not more.
Yeah.
So that's the mortality rate. That's the percentage that die that contract the illness.
Yeah.
And as for why they flipped, I mean, we can't know everything. You know, we're just independent researchers doing our work and trying to understand this situation just like everybody else, and we have to look at certain things, but what we're seeing is a dangerous trend towards something called digital authoritarianism. This is something that most people are not aware of except for with China, but after this, the coronavirus, you know, hit, we started to see success stories like South Korea. In South Korea, they already have this kind of digital authoritarianism tech in place, although they're not as bad as somewhere like China. But what they do is they basically, smart city tech, Internet of Things, you've probably heard of this. It's where everything is essentially connected. And what they did is they released an app using government and business and private company data, and they tracked people. We're seeing this. The University of Southampton worked with Google, for example, to develop an app, and they already could track people. Now, the reason that they could track people so fastly was because most people, when they get a Google app, already sign away all their rights to that information.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't realize this. So they've got the information. France has recently called for Google, things like Google, to remove all data protection.
Yep, here it is. France urges Apple and Google to ease privacy rules. It's so nice. Just to ease off on the privacy rules a little bit. Let us just map and trace it. But hey, I mean, let's be honest. It's to protect us, right? This horrible thing. It's just they want to keep us safe. I get it. We'll go along with this, right?
South Korea, they did things like.
This is serious, guys.
For masks, right? They if you want to get masks, they put added to the app. That basically would show you where masks are in stock. Now, this all sounds very good, right? You all start to think, you know, and we had problems. I mean, all the solutions to a lot of things that they're bringing up all base themselves actually in this digital authoritarianism, like somewhat like China, although there is a little bit of a misconception with China to a point. China hasn't nationally brought out its nationalized credit system. But it's more of a trust system. And what it does is it allows the government doesn't have to arrest you, but companies will blacklist you. So what they do is, at the moment, they're doing tests in little areas. And if you're blacklisted by this company, you get blacklisted across the board.
Yeah, if one do. And we're seeing that kind of stuff, of course, against thought criminals and dissidents in the West as well, that... You know, banks or financial services kicks you off if there's enough articles written about someone. No one is like, I don't want to touch this thing, right? And that's so it is coming here too. And my argument have also been all along that it's like, oh, okay, sure, they're obviously building a new type of infrastructure. They call it tracing now. It's kind of like a politically correct term essentially. It's surveillance. It's mapping you, taking records of where you've been, who you came in contact with, or rather, who's other person's cell phone you came in contact with. That's how it operates, right? Bluetooth connectivity connection. Yeah. But most people carry that on them.
In South Korea, they actually used CCTV footage and facial recognition, which is something that's been massively developed in China and by Facebook. They have one of the most sophisticated facial recognition systems in the world because obviously people keep sticking their photos on Facebook, which gives them all the data. And so what they could do is they could work with Google for the tracking app on your mobile phone. Then the governments could say, we could also install these facial recognition systems and work with Facebook because they've got all the data and they already know who most of you are and your facial profile.
Yeah.
Because how many people use Facebook in the West and put pictures up? And they've got so many pictures that gives them a really accurate
Sorry to cut you off, but do you remember when they did that 10-year challenge thing? It went viral, like everybody uploaded. You know what that is about? That's solely about teaching the artificial intelligence to track you over time and how faces change with age, right? That's essentially what it was about. That's what it was about.
Loads of people were
doing it. And they're just like, look at me, you know, kind of thing. It's like, you dumbasses, you're handing away all this information, teaching the AI essentially to track and trace how we transform over time generally. But yeah, here's one video I'm playing here. And again, it's like, okay, it's not that bad, but imagine when the drones are there and the talking cameras is there, or just direct fines. Direct deposit fines. Well, you get a fine in the mail, or you swipe from your digital bank account currency that you walk too close to another person. You're violating the 6 feet rule for more than 3 microns of a second. And so therefore, boop, that's it. We take money from you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there you're seeing it in a smaller way. They're just showing you what this technology can do that's measuring, obviously, the distance between people. But what we're seeing now with this coronavirus, which is something that's really important, you may have noticed this yourself, and I'm sure you have, rather than it being when will it end, now we're talking exit strategies and waves.
Right,
and people like Bill Gates are saying, this is going to change the way we live forever. Now, I heard that once before, you know, after 9/11, right? And we had to change the way we live forever all of a sudden. And we did. Look at what happened.
Look at what happened. Security. Yep.
Now they're going to start going, well, we need to be able to track people because they might even come at the end of it. This wasn't that bad. But what if, right? The next one is that bad.
What if we get
another Spanish flu?
Yep.
What if we get something like that? Then we need, if we have all these measures in place, because remember, like the UK government, their act on coronavirus last 2 years. And that's give them now death certificates only have to be signed off by one person. all through the legal system, they only need one person now rather than two. Now, that's a big thing, because it means you can only, you know, it opens it up more for corruption. That's the reason that we normally have two signatures on everything.
Yeah.
So with them talking waves, with them talking, and also with vaccines, a possibility here. Now, this is just a possibility, but say they decide that to return to normal life, you must have a vaccine. Or you're going to be, and your companies might demand that if you want to go back to work, you must have a vaccine. That's perfectly within the rights of the company, right?
So yeah,
we can see this done through corporate measures, not just government. And the problem, there might be some people out there that are pro-vaccine, and that's fine. Everyone can make their own decision.
Sure, yeah, go ahead, take it. You know, I'm not trying to stop anyone else. I'm just trying to provide information. At least that is, at this point, essentially not permitted even in the mainstream, right? We've seen the censorship now of, it's essentially just like, at least you would think that you would want to be educated in as broad of a range as possible in when you're playing Russian roulette, essentially. But that they're limiting that now, and they're saying, no, it's only these authoritative sources that are correct. Yeah. Facebook is doing it. YouTube is doing it. Google is doing it. Twitter is doing it. Pinterest is doing it. All these major social media companies are like limiting information that offers a different view. Because
we see
that's dangerous.
On our video, the first thing that comes up at the bottom is get the official NHS COVID-19 and Wikipedia. It links you to links if you do Holocaust videos, etc., all the same. But it puts the official page or the official narrative, right? Like, don't watch this video. Click on this to get the truth type.
Yeah, that's right. Totally Orwellian. Totally Orwellian. Hey, let's listen to, I haven't actually listened to this. Yeah. I heard it yesterday. It's Robert Redfield, the current CDC director, talking about what you just said here. A second wave is going to be more devastating. Let's hope the clip is relevant.
I do want to mention a man who's done a very good job for us, Dr. Robert Redfield, was totally misquoted in the media on a statement about the fall season and the virus. Totally misquoted. I spoke to him. He said it was ridiculous. He was talking about the flu and corona coming together at the same time.
When I commented yesterday that there was a possibility of the fall, winter, next fall and winter, it could be more difficult, more complicated. When we had two respiratory illnesses circulating at the same time, influenza and the coronavirus 19. But I think it's really important to emphasize what I didn't say. I didn't say that this was going to...
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. We'll listen to the rest here. But is not the flu a form of a coronavirus?
I believe so, yes.
I think so. That's what I've heard.
Because they call it... The difference here is a novel coronavirus.
Right. Like it's SARS. A new... Of course, exactly. No, I get that, of course. But it's like it's a version of the same thing that we've been dealing with for a long time.
I mean, what they don't say here as well... with vaccines, for example, just to explain a little bit, a lot of people don't understand. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of new flus every year.
Yeah.
And what they do for a vaccine in your country is they will predict, using models, which one is going to be the most viral.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they do then is they make a vaccine for it the previous year. So most of the, if a different one becomes more viral, it actually is ineffective. So the hundreds of, he's talking here about two things together. Well, there are hundreds of different flus every year. So, I mean, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Flu isn't one thing. And just to go back onto a point that I did want to make about vaccines, because the pro-vaxxers might be saying here that we should get these vaccines, etc. But like I said, it could be used to limit our freedoms. And another point is forced medication. The only people that are forced medicated are prisoners and mentally ill. Now, if they say that the whole population of a country needs to be vaccinated to return to normal life, then they're treating you like a prisoner or somebody that's in a mental institution.
Right.
And that's just, I think, rather than go pro-vax, anti-vax on this, we need to go pro-choice, as in the choice that we don't have to have medication forced down our throats because the government says, because that's a slippery road to go down. We'll end up in Brave New World and be having our soma soon, right?
Well, I mean, when we've seen this, the I don't know what else to call it, the fear factor or whatever, like of this, people who normally have somewhat of a rational capability and can think outside the box, and can also see that obviously majority of the time, a lot of our the big institutions, a lot of the the our governments, etc., media, they have a track record of lying. There's omissions. There are things they don't tell us. They deny things. They call certain things that we talked about conspiracy theories. This just it keeps coming, kind of thing. But as you say, it's like this could also be that it's you know, if they reach where they want to go now with COVID-19 as the excuse, it never stops there. We won't stop with that. I mean, again, either they will use it that it comes back cyclically, as you say, but why not a disease, as you pointed out with your statistic, tomorrow? Oh, actually, it turns out this is even more deadly. Now we have to do this. Yeah. Now we have to do that. Now, and all of a sudden, people accept these measures that are put in place to protect you, while they've never thought about these kinds of things before. Or, like, it's just so out of the blue. And the submission by people are just, like, going along with this without questioning it. It's just unbelievable to me.
Well, we put a quote in the video from Audley Huxley, where he says you can do everything with bayonets, but sit on them. And he goes on to say that you've basically got to love your leader. So when you put in them, like, problem, reaction, solution type events, right, you put a problem, the government solves it for them. So then they go along with these things. You need people to accept these things. You can't force it on the people.
No.
No, they won't accept it. But if people accept them, and like I say, government doesn't even have to do this. You could be, for example, you could work somewhere that deals with elderly people, and your company says you must be vaccinated. Now we've gone down the road of essentially forced vaccinations. This is the main point of it. And if you actually add this stuff to the stuff that we're seeing with the climate change as well, where we've all got to cut. It's all 2030. Have you noticed? 2030, we've got to cut carbon emissions.
Agenda 2030.
Yeah. Well, the Internet of Things, smart cities, the digital authoritarianism will help with that, because that'll be able to. Everyone's got smart meters now. And this is an interesting point that I want to bring up about 5G as well. Everybody's got smart meters now in the UK. They were pretty much mandatory. We haven't, but very few people haven't. Well, these smart meters regulate and see everything you're doing. In Germany, they did a study where they tried to hack into one, I think it was a university, and they could watch just from the power output what channel they were watching on TV.
Really?
Just by hacking a smart meter. Yeah. Now, these smart meters, well, what happens if they say, once we get used to this more digital authoritarianism, used to, they say, with something like climate change, you're only allowed X amount of units of power a week. Yeah? And your smart meter just turns off.
Remember they had that in parts of California that were doing a dry run on these kinds of things, where water rations, power rations. That's like, what was it, The Fifth Element is pretty good. I mean, it's basically he lives in a pod. Remember that movie, Fifth Element, in the beginning? He lives in a pod. I don't know if they're eating bugs, but probably do. That's the only form of protein they have. And it was like, you know, you can only shower for so long. There's certain, you know, there's restrictions on everything. And at the same, I mean, it's not that that's completely unfounded. If we're going to be in a world that has 20 billion people, like, yeah, there's going to be limitations, obviously. Like, you can't just say, well, you know, consume as endlessly as possible for however long. But it's like, wait a minute. It's like, what you should question is, like, opening the borders and let people come from the third world into the first world and consume on the same level as us, for example. That's the, how's that affecting, you know, pollution and resources and all those kinds of equations. But it's not about that. It's about limiting the West. It's about breaking down industrial nations. It's about equalizing resource distribution. Equalizing. You know, that's what it's about, right?
Well, we see the same talk with coronavirus as we see with the climate change stuff about equalizing nations, right? Everybody, I mean, you've got the Belt and Road, is it?
Yes, the Belt and Road Initiative.
China, where
Israel, a major component in that, by the way.
Yeah. They run it basically through, but China, it's coming out of China, it's all China tech. That's all digital authoritarianism.
Yeah.
And with the 5G, just to go back to, as I was talking about smart meters, people are worried about the effects of 5G, you know, the radiation effects, like with mobile phones. Now, I don't know much about 5G in that sense. I know that mobile phones, when they were tested on people with high stress and put next to their head, they did cause severe heating. And there is some problems with that. That's why I don't have a mobile phone and I don't put one next to my head very often unless I really have to. But even if you forget that, what a lot of people don't understand, and the same with the smart meters, everybody's worried about the radiation, but it's what they actually do. to get into an Internet of Things, which paves the way for proper smart cities where they can limit all these things, you actually need a system like 5G to take all that information in. So 5G put up in your street can actually bring information from everybody's house, every smart meter, every mobile phone, every computer. And it takes it all into there, and it can then basically put into a big machine that will then predict behavior models. This is how smart cities work. So they say, we need to build an extra road here because there's more traffic and they can direct you. Now, all these things sound positive to a point. You think, well, this will be better for us. But the problem with it is, as soon as they decide to restrict, they can restrict en masse with ease. As soon as they say, like we said about power, they've already got all the information. They can just switch it off. It doesn't. And same with currency. What have we seen with this coronavirus and people going to shops, right? The Federal Reserve, although it's not federal, actually was quarantining money coming from Asia at one point for fear of the virus. Yeah, they were quarantining money. But then we said, oh, money's bad. Physical money is dirty. Then there's all these studies about the...
Well, the EU has launched digital currency. China, has sped up the digital currency they have. It was in the language of the first bill that was introduced about the CARE Act that we talked about, the stimulus bill. It was in there language-wise. One of the person who proposes removed it, but one left it open. So it was still a little bit of a possibility in that stimulus bill to go in that direction, you know.
And this is what I mean by portraying something positive. They would go, I mean, have you seen the, I forgot what they're called now, these new Amazon shops where you don't need your credit card, you don't need anything. You download the app, you walk into these Amazon shops, you pick stuff up off the shelf, put it in your basket, and you walk out, right?
Yeah.
And it just automatically pays through your Amazon account and the app. Now, the problem is, so people will, this is what Audley Huxley was saying when he said you can do everything with bayonets, but sit on them. And that was his contention with 1984, obviously, that the best way to rule people is actually get them to want it. So everybody would download these apps, but then Amazon is sharing its information with the government on your purchasing choices. Then, like in China, then they're going to give you a score, right?
Yeah.
So then when you get the score, then that will say if you're allowed certain things. Just like our credit score that we have now in the West, although this were taking medical data, purchases, everything across the board once they've got this. So you were, there'd be the idea of privacy will be gone.
Yes.
And then if they do decide that we need to then severely change our ways because of something like climate change, they can instantly limit us because it's all there.
And it will be extended to people who are enemies of the new order, people who are... of course. Dissidents, thought criminals, people they don't like, who they consider to be... Well, I mean, they already try to terrorist label people, essentially, who are not anti-white. That's actually the legal language now in bills being introduced in the U.S. And as we know, the U.S. leads the way, and they put pressure on other countries, etc., and they end up passing these kinds of laws, right? That's why we have the U.S. trying to ban groups in Sweden and in, like, other countries, essentially, right? This is insanity, but... So.
We've seen this with how China does it. China is already, because the government data goes in too. So if the government says this person is a danger, he's blacklisted, all the companies blacklist you too.
Yeah.
It's kind of a trust system that goes across the board. And especially people, it doesn't matter if you're left or right, actually, it doesn't matter what side you're on with this. Anybody that is anti-government, anybody that has opinions that differ from the government, remember all this fake news? Well, an easy way they can cut that down, as we see in China, they're in social media accounts. Once you're blacklisted, they kick you off.
Yeah,
you're not allowed.
That's right.
You're not the time of anonymous posting will be gone because I don't know if you remember, they were going to ban porn in the UK.
I remember that. The little license, was it? Or what did they call it again?
It's not, but this is an ID to get into internet access.
Yeah.
Now, that is coming. Ways around it, but they will criminalize those ways around it.
Yeah.
So people are going, I'll just use the VPN. Well, then they might criminalize VPNs.
Yep. Or find some way of back routing. There's always a way. There's always a way, you know.
So once you've got something like that, then as soon as you're blacklisted, all your social media accounts are dead and you can't post anonymously.
No.
So it's removing all privacy and giving them the power. And COVID, as I said with COVID-19 to some of my friends, COVID-19 appears to be One of the ways that they sell it to us, the same with the Amazon shops, etc. And, you know, pizza's going to be delivered by drones. Now what we're seeing drones used for, to run around parks telling everybody to get in their house, right? They're going to bring it in a way that we accept it. And then they can use it for anything they want.
It's trauma, right? They're forcing us on a mental level to accept something which we normally would not accept. And now people are, this is fine. We need this to help to save us, right? So
it's called nudge theory. What you do is you say you plan an event or they do this in advertising with medical things. So say they with, for instance, vaccines, they want to promote vaccines. What they do is they might run an ad campaign, or in our case, they might run something like this where they can nudge you and change your opinion. So your opinion after the event is different to that before the event.
Yeah.
And then what happens is once your opinion has changed, or the, a majority of the opinion has changed, then they can introduce that law. It's called nudge theory. You can look it up. It's a way of nudging people. Into how they portray it in their medical documents and that, and psychological documents, is saying nudge to better behaviors, right? But we know what are better behaviors. Well, when we're talking about better behaviors, we're talking about the better behaviors from the government. So they certainly don't want people like me and you talking.
No,
that's why you got kicked off YouTube. And if YouTube bans you, then you'll get blacklisted elsewhere.
So. Yep, and that started happening. Vimeo deleted us, then financial platforms does it, PayPal, and then Venmo, and then, it never stops. It never stops.
This is the thing. When I was actually doing research with this video, I realized a lot of it's already in.
It is.
Sorry,
yeah.
It is. Here crying.
Oh no, that's good. We love white kids. No worries. Yeah. We like to hear them. We like. Hey,
she's a little bit ill at the moment.
Sorry to hear that. Yeah, hopefully everything is good. Hey,
no, she'll be fine.
I wanted to show you a couple of things here because it relates just to what you brought up, and hopefully it's not boring and too long. I actually haven't seen it before, but. A vital component in having an Internet of Things, right? It's essentially a smart grid. Everything can communicate, right? Every device, every electronic device is connected to the Internet. It has an IP address, right? That's why they're talking about the IPv5 addresses were running out. They came up with this IP version 6, I believe. Which gives you, broader range in the amount of devices that it can handle and control. Starlink is an interesting thing. I commented on it, I think it was yesterday in the No Go Zone show I did, but it's, again, could be worth for people who didn't see that go over this again. It's Elon Musk, right? He's built kind of one project or one venture on top of the other, right? He was behind PayPal. Now we, of course, see how PayPal is being used and all that stuff. He sold that. Then Tesla, the electric car manufacturing, self-driving cars, like those kinds of things, right? He's, of course, developed artificial intelligence also. He's actually warned about that and said, we're building a monster. We have to control this thing, blah, blah, blah. Now, SpaceX, one of the primary things it does now is to outsource both to NASA and other countries. Mm-hmm. And they're using their own rockets to send up. The goal is to send up about 60, I think it's between 40 and 60,000 satellites around the Earth as a grid that's going to cover the whole internet with high speed broadband internet connectivity, right? All over, which is it's not a euphemism, but what that means is it's 5G and then 6 or 7, whatever, like whatever they say, right? But it's global coverage where there's been unreliable connection, where it's been expensive or completely unavailable. That's what they're going to do. So they're building a little bit of a connectivity grid. Like if you're in sub-Saharan Africa or you're on an island somewhere, wherever you are globally, whatever device is there, it's going to have constant connectivity. And constantly being able to communicate with the artificial intelligence system at the grid. Let's play this video. I actually haven't seen this, so if it sucks, we'll turn it off. But it's the sun talking about what is Elon Musk's Starlink network. Let's listen to this a bit here. Oh, let me turn this up. Sorry, guys.
More annoying than when dodgy internet ruins a perfectly good Netflix.
I know, you're going to watch Netflix, right? And your internet goes out? What do you do? you just totally send up 60,000 satellites that beams 5G so you can get your... All right, we're not even 10 seconds in. Sorry, guys. Okay, here we go.
But could SpaceX's CEO Elon Musk's new Starlink network project be about to change this?
Blasted off from a Falcon 9 rocket, Musk successfully launched the first 60 satellites of thousands that will deploy in the hope to eventually provide a low-cost, high-performance internet access anywhere in the world. It essentially means rebuilding the internet, but this time in space. So how will Starlink work, and when
internet.
Can we expect to benefit from it?
All right, son, enough with the interludes. No, it's coming more here. Here we go, here we go.
Elon Musk is working to revolutionize the internet by building a global communication system that will blanket the world in Wi-Fi.
Nice.
He plans to send a mega constellation of nearly 12,000 satellites into outer space, which will orbit above Earth and provide internet connectivity to the surface below.
You could be in a jungle in South America, and if you had just an internet link somehow, you'd have access to all of humanity's information. So it would actually effectively create a superorganism.
It's an ambitious project that will aim to provide internet to every region of the planet. The mega constellation will be broken into two, the first being sent to a slightly higher altitude and compromising of 4,409 satellites, and the second made up of 7,518. It's so ambitious that it essentially means sending up half the satellites within the next 6 years, in the hope that Starlink will be operating to some capacity by 2020.
3, 2, 1.
Before today's launch, Musk initially tested two Starlink satellites, dubbed Tintin A and Tintin B, which had been propelled into space but didn't actually reach operational orbit. Despite this, though, Musk claimed that the two Tintin tests were showing latency low enough to play fast response video games.
So what do we know about the satellites?
Well, each one weighs around 385 kilograms and will use lasers to communicate with each other. They'll also have an expected lifespan of about 5 years, after which time they'll be manually brought out of orbit.
But you don't need to worry about any space junk dropping out of the sky.
Oh, good.
As the company claims, they'll burn up as they return to Earth's atmosphere. While satellite internet has been around for a while, the ones currently sitting in space are 22,000 miles high over the equator, and with a distance that long, it's meant connectivity for us Earthlings are unreliable and slow.
And I thought the internet would be something that would dramatically affect the future of humanity. It would be like acquiring a nervous system. And whereas previously communication would have to occur almost by osmosis.
And if Musk manages to meet his goal, the new initiative could give the world internet speeds that are around 40 times faster than what we're experiencing now. And it won't matter whether you're in the middle of a city
Facebook,
or deep in the Amazon jungle.
Sounds pretty good, right?
But with all this potential for a faster way for the world to communicate, it's perhaps no wonder that the competition from rival companies is heating up. SpaceX is so far managed to keep Starlink's technology.
I'd have expected the sun to do a better video, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not that great. The green screen is very cringy. But why do I bring this up, right? Well, we're talking about technology as a way of why you need like more. Actually, so this is the article, right? Why the coronavirus pandemic may fast forward 5G adoption in the U.S. Essentially, they need to track and trace everybody, right? And they've already said this is a limitation. I saw them article today. Pull it up in a bit where they say it's discrimination to do this on smartphones because not everyone has a smartphone. What's the solution? Well, it's not to not do it that way. It's to give everybody a smartphone. It's essentially, they can't implant a microchip in you just yet, right? That's a little bit too much for some people still.
No.
So you can just carry it with you. Everyone carries their phone with them all the time, right? That's what they do. So you just use that. That's the thing, right? So you need... And they explain that in the article that essentially it's taken up so much more bandwidth, not only because people are like... isolating and stuff. And imagine when this goes VR, right? Everybody's at home. You're doing your virtual reality vacation because it's dangerous to fly or you're not allowed to go anywhere anymore. I mean, they're building an infrastructure with the use of the coronavirus as an excuse here.
Yeah.
And the Starlink thing is interesting too because, that is that blanket coverage with which it's necessary to have an IoT, Internet of Things kind of infrastructure in place, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the other ways that they would do it is bringing people into the cities. By 20-something, they believe that massive proportion build mega cities like they are in China. I mean, a lot of people, we see a lot of things from China looking backwards, but they have some absolutely massive mega cities now that they're building all over the place, brand new ones, all high tech. And that's what they want to bring in. But you explained it well there. Just this massive data collection. AI is very important, you mentioned there, because AI then does predictive programming. Like I say, when you read about this from the official sources, that they're always presented with like, oh, and it'll be able to automatically control traffic lights to and send messages to people in their car saying, don't take this road to ease congestion. But the fact that they can do that means that they know everything you're doing. They know where you're going. They can predict. They can start predicting your behaviors, predicting how humans. And we know that, you know, like I said, and with the mobile phones, like you say, everybody's got one. Well, this, I've always said that this, it's funny that the tech is actually the soma of Brave New World in our country, because everybody's addicted. And like you say, with that little video there, we show like Netflix is, oh, I want faster speed. We'd give up so much for little bits of convenience.
In
the end,
absolutely,
we've got nothing. Like I said, with the Amazon shops, well, you don't need to queue. But why is this a solution to coronavirus? Well, if you don't need to queue, you can get people in and out of a shop faster. They don't have to talk to somebody at the desk, so they don't have to interact with anybody else. So these types of things are going to be rolled out more and more as protective measures.
That's why this thing with social distancing is, well, it's very efficient in this equation to implement, because then you give the excuse that, well, then things has to be automated, things has to be automatic, or artificial intelligence system sees, you know, whether it's, as you said, and I've, you know, talked about this and followed some of this stuff for years with like RFID chips on every product in the store and stuff. And you just put it in your cart, it registers, it auto swipes from your account, and you don't have to do anything. You don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to interact. Soon, of course, as you said, it would just be drones that come and deliver everything to your home and stuff. You never have to leave. You just put on your virtual headset and you'll sit in the pod and you'll have a great time. You know, it'll be fantastic.
This is the point. I mean, one of the points we tried to make at the end of that video that we did is, what are we willing to give up here? You know, the safest place in the world is probably a padded cell with health professionals and free meals a day delivered to your door, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. But I mean,
do we want that? I mean, where do we take safety? Even if you say that this is killing, even if it was 10 times as worse, where do you take your safety? Where does preservation of life actually end up destroying the value of life?
Right. Or even eventually life itself. I mean, it's like, and I know we're talking kind of sci-fi and stuff here now, but imagine that type of human being, like in the future, that have maybe for, let's say, a couple of generations, they've gone maybe underground because it's not safe in the, on the, out there in the world or whatever, right? They live in pods. They have like, their blood can't coagulate anymore. They're very sick. Like, as soon as you touch them, they start bleeding and shit. Like, where, or they have technology embedded. They have to be on hormones all the time, or steroids all the time. Like, all kinds of weird shit that would just rise up from people. If you remove yourself from, I mean, and this kind of goes a little bit to the heart of the kind of stuff that you even cover on Mimisch Brunner, of like how we used to live, what made us stronger, the challenges that we must live in the biological world and take part in that. If we try to remove ourselves, which this is a part of, let's face it, that we're trying to remove ourselves and essentially replace our immune system with tyrannical measures because we think some people are so weak that they can't handle it. If there are weak people, they can isolate. We can do things for them and remove them, but you don't have to make everybody suffer under this thing, right?
No, of course not. I mean, exactly. And I just had a point there, but I forgot it.
Oh, sorry.
It was a point of what you were saying. But, you know, with, like I say, the quality of life has to be at a certain level. Otherwise you reduce it. And like you say, these hardships do encourage us to be stronger. And there's always going to be hardships in life. You cannot remove them. And anybody promising you, just understand, anybody promising you that they can remove all of these hardships, that they can suddenly make your world completely safe and you don't have to do anything, is trying to control you.
Look at this. Yeah. I want to keep that point. Look at this. This is a Starlink satellite train test seen from Earth. It's a laser that the woman in the video talked about. This is yesterday. This is yesterday. Check this out. Keep going there. But this is interesting. Talk about building a grid of lasers doing tests of this grid system that they're building with these satellites. Anyway, sorry to cut you off there. Please proceed.
I do question Elon Musk. He's done a lot of things that he said he's going to do. I think his tunnels ended up as just normal tunnels. He talks, to be honest, he talks like an idiot. He doesn't seem to even understand what he's on about half the time. I think he made a lot of money very early on from, was it PayPal?
PayPal, yeah.
And I think he's giving, But I don't. I mean, he released that flamethrower, which was just like a workman's tool.
I don't know what that was about. Bizarre. Is he a front man maybe or something? That's all he is. I don't know what he is.
I don't know what he is, but yeah. I've seen a lot of his work. He doesn't seem. I mean, I was even suspicious about when he sent the Tesla into space. It looked very CGI to me. I mean, but he said that it was meant to look like that, so what do I know?
Right? Yeah, he's a PR man, obviously. I mean, he's done some cool stuff and whatever, but, you know, and I'm not saying that it's like I'm not a complete Luddite or whatever, but we're talking about the detriment of technology and how far, as you say, we're willing to go for the convenience, ultimately. That's what it is.
That's how they'll sell it to you.
Yeah. So, okay, let me do this. I saw there was a couple of your super chats, guys, came in. I want to make sure I get to some of those. And we have much more to talk about. I want to show a couple of more clips and stuff like that, too. We're having a great conversation here with Mimish Brunner. Silosopher, a little bit earlier here today, sent a diamond. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. There was no message associated with that. I saw that Conrad K. sent a message as well over on DonorBox. DonorBox.org/red-ice. He says, more Trump bucks for our side, he says. Thank you so much, sir. I salute tonight's guest, Mimish Brunner. He says, your videos and work have greatly helped my depression. You both do our ancestors proud. Hail my brothers. Well, thank you so much, Conrad. I appreciate that. That's very nice of you.
And that's great to hear.
Absolutely. Thank you. He's a great supporter of the show as well. Angry White Soccer Mom sends a diamond. Thank you. No message. Techno Viking sends a diamond. Get in the pod. Eat the bugs, he says. Indeed. Hedavad Sivatsi sends a diamond. Says, can we please start tagging the virus, COVID-19, 1984? Yeah, I saw some people do that. I do kind of like that. That's actually what it is. Good point. Hedavard again sends a diamond. Tesla cars are tracked plus can be turned off remotely. Well, exactly. That's also the thing, right? Exactly. Imagine you've done something wrong, whatever, like you can't drive the car, you can't escape, you can't take out money, you can't do, like, this is a nightmare, right?
When the Internet of Things puts all this information together and it's basically centralization of information, they're going to send on and off switches across the board. Like you say, it's just a mass collection. And like you said about, I mean, when we were talking far off, living underground, or so, yeah, it seems, but we've got a lot of things already in place. They're already trying to tell us to eat bugs. They're already trying to restrict our movement. I mean, a big player on this is the climate change too. And that's why we wanted to make a separate video, which we will be doing, where we bring COVID-19 and the climate change stuff together to show you the full implications of this. Because as we said earlier, we're already seeing this massive push. And a big thing as well of climate change is the actual, as you said earlier, and you briefly mentioned it, the equalization of the world, right? We've all got to be equal.
Yeah.
And this is why you rightly pointed out as well that although they talk about population control, it's only ever Westerners that we're talking about population control.
Yeah, exactly.
Not India or China, where they've got a billion in each country.
No.
Because they've got to destroy our power regime. And once they destroy that, they can equalize the globe. And as we know about anything, that when they talk about equality, it's rarely lifting everybody up because we can't. As you also stated, in the West, we use more resources. You can't lift everybody up to that standard.
No.
So you've got to start lifting everybody's got to come down. And so what people that are in the West don't realize in our countries, our living standard compared to most of the world is much higher in their how they judge it, carbon footprints, et cetera, et cetera. So if they want to equalize us, we've got to drastically change from their perspective. So that's going to cause us to see some, and this is one of the ways they can do it. And like you say, this idea.
Absolutely. Let me play one clip to underline the point that you made. And I want to scroll down. I'm on my Twitter feed here, but there was one story. Was it from yesterday? No, there was a reply. Sorry. It was about this idea they were warning about a massive, here we go. This is right. The UN are warning about a massive, starvation camp or campaign, but that the coronavirus will cause starvation in the West, right? World at risk of biblical famine due to pandemic, like the UN, right? So the UN have, of course, had this idea with Agenda 2030. They're talking about redistribution. It's essentially, it's a threatening way of saying we need to do everything we can to help them. And actually, in fact, we underline that with a clip from the World Health Organization themselves that they talked about any country who is at need we need redistribution of resources and whatever it's necessary from those countries. Check this out here.
We can understand that governments have a primary responsibility to their own healthcare workers, but healthcare workers are a global resource. Healthcare workers are a precious resource, and the life of a health worker in one country is certainly as valued as the life of a health worker in another. So we would like to see that word again, solidarity, distribution of whatever the commodity is, on the basis of need, the basis of benefit.
Yeah, whatever the commodity is, on the basis of need, right? That's what we're that's what they're talking about.
Well, he was talking there about health workers being a commodity.
Yeah, interesting.
Thus,
yeah. What?
Thus, they could maybe ship our health workers or our health technology to other countries.
So.
Like, we've got too many ventilators, so we'll send some to a country that doesn't. I mean, when you start talking about the redistribution of things like health resources, etc., like I say again, we're in their scale of things, we're up there. So we've got to come right down.
Yeah, it's not to bring others up, it's to bring everyone down, right, to the same level. That's what it's about. The industrialization. These organizations are used as tools to take us towards global governance. They've talked about that for decades,
global
and now they're
governance.
You know, yeah.
Because I've seen some nationalists argue that this is anti-global agenda because coronavirus spreads, and I'm like, this is exactly what they want.
Yeah, it is.
Once you start getting this mass data, I mean, they're already like, what have we heard constantly? Even in that Vent 201, I actually watched that from the book. All they talk about in their solutions is how the world's got to come together. The world's got to start sharing data. It's got to start once you start sharing all your data, sharing your health workers because they're a resource, sharing all of your natural resources, sharing your food supplies, what's the next step? Well, you need a centralized body to organize that sharing, which is a world government.
And also an identity. This is an important point, and I've played this clip also before, but again, it's a rundown of some of the things we talked about, repeating and building the image here, or like an idea of building it, constructing a picture, not just out of the blue, but with their messaging of what they tell us. You need to have a global identity, and of course, from a psychological perspective, a common enemy is one of the most powerful ways that you can drive people together, right? Listen to what Bill Gates said here. This is back in 2015. They were talking about how to become global citizen. And the global citizen campaign was, of course, that they put a concert on, which was streamed, right, just the other day, last Saturday, called the Global Citizen. And we're all coming, all these stars and celebrities and musicians were coming together and talking about shit like Lady Gaga and stuff like that. She was praising Tedros, the World Health Organization, Marxist, and all this kind of stuff in it. But look, check out this. Bill Gates right here. Oh, here we go.
We want to ignite people's desire for connection. The power of digital technology can bring people together and break down barriers. That's where Global Citizen comes in. The way to connect millions of people and take action together to help create a better world. This year represents an incredible opportunity for people to show their support for these issues, to use their voice, to use their time, and to go beyond their own communities to connect with something larger. We need a movement of global citizens, from world leaders to people everywhere, to help solve the world's biggest problems. I've signed up. I hope you will too, and encourage your own network of people to become global citizens.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Global citizen, an identity, something we have in common. We're fighting together. It's us against this invisible enemy. It's pretty, I'm not saying it was a plan from the get-go, but they're using it because it fits into this narrative. You know what I mean?
I mean, I would go as far as to say that some of this is for ahead of time.
I'm not discounting that, but
I mean, but I can't prove it. I'm not going to sit here and say I can prove it. But yeah, we've seen the global citizen there, which is, it's the same as, the multiculturalism. The false idea of diversity. It's a lack of diversity.
Yeah.
You keep promoting it as this, like, but what it means is that we're going to become a rootless people. They've been promoting it in sci-fi for years because they call it like a type one or a type something society where they put aside all of their differences and now they're flying into space. And this is my question of people like Elon Musk. I think he plays into that a little bit. We're all going to be flown through space in the next minute. The truth is that they want total control. And when they get it, like anybody that gets it, it's never enough.
I mean,
And anybody arguing that we should be risking, that we should be scared of this virus and we should, like we said earlier about the quality of life, you know, is what we've got to understand is that our governments, and this is a point I really want to make, because I have seen some nationalists trying to promote this idea that the governments, we're authoritarian as nationalists, right? So we should be pro. And I'm like, well, could you imagine in Bolshevik Russia, right, that somebody there that was a nationalist going, well, you know, these communists are authoritarian, so let's just give them some
too.
Power.
Well, exactly.
We are too.
They're so fashy right now, totally based. And it's like, wait a minute. Yeah. Like, if, and I've said this before, but if it was a government that had our best interest at heart for, yeah, what, 20, 30 years, not trying to replace us, you know, up to now, and then, you know, then it's like, okay, they're taking stringent measures. They're locking down. They're taking fashy action because they are actually want to protect us, right? In that way. Okay, fine. Their track record is total negligence. They are incompetent. They are conspiring against us. They're trying to replace us in our own countries. They don't care about our opinions. They're trying to suppress the people that have valid concerns about the demographic future. It's all this kind of shit, right? That's not the crowd you want to line up with all of a sudden and say, actually, this line of thinking is great now all of a sudden. It doesn't work like that.
They've proven themselves for decades, if not longer, to be completely hostile to the ethnic majorities in their countries.
Yeah.
Like here in the UK. You know, I mean, this has been covered endless, but, you know, you can go for a job as a police officer. And if you're a white male, you're just turned out the door straight away.
That's
because
right.
They don't want you. Right. So we see when a government is hostile to its ethnic majority, then I'm not going to give them any more powers or be supportive of anything they do, to be quite honest, because I don't believe that they're going to use those powers in my best interest, at least, especially as a nationalist myself, and somebody that openly speaks out about it. I think they might abuse those powers to shut me up and shut up many other people.
Oh, they will. They have, and they will now that they're trying to drive in the final nail in our coffin, essentially, with the implementation of the technology and the infrastructure that they're building in the wake of this thing. Now, let me speak about this thing, too, because people, and I heard others, and Corvette reported a pretty good video about, like, the Corona World Order and stuff like that, and I did a criticism of that video. Many things I agree with, many things he's spot on with. But he talked about this thing with borders and, well, they're not going to have borders. Everything will be locked down and stuff like that. And partially that's correct. They might have, let's say, regions or something in the future and you can't travel if you don't have a red or green or blue pass or shit like that. The World Economic Forum have worked on some of these kinds of things, digital passports and stuff like that. However, ethnically replacing white people is something that will still continue ad infinitum.
Yes.
Refugees, migrants will still keep on coming. That's never going to shut down. And again, to underline and in fact prove that, to tie that into the 2030 agenda that we've been talking about. We're talking about United Nations groups. These are world the UN is an umbrella group, essentially, and they are, you know, directing like the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization, all these kinds of things, right, under them. Listen to this in terms of how they see, again, it's about redistributing resources, making sure, how do you take people out of poverty? Not to raise them up, it's to bring them to rich countries, to white countries. Check this out. It's about migration and Agenda 2030.
Migration is a global phenomenon that touches us all. Many of us know someone who has moved to another country or have migrated ourselves. By embracing the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and its 17 Sustainable Development Goals, we have an unmissable opportunity to harness the development potential of migration, to support beneficial outcomes, starting with reducing inequalities and putting the right policies in place to ensure safer, more orderly and regular migration.
Regular migration.
Migration has been a long-standing coping strategy for people to pull themselves out of poverty, cope with lack of basic infrastructure or search for better opportunities. People's reasons to move can also be influenced by conflict, natural hazards, or environmental conditions linked to climate change. And in a global context of rapid urbanization, movement of people is increasingly taking place to cities and urban areas, enriching local communities and societies, both where migrants are and where they come from. The knowledge, skills and experience that migrants bring and gain in new places contribute to the labour force in key sectors such as health and play a vital role in building diverse and productive societies. Migration can empower women economically and socially and help people realise their personal aspirations and educational potential. This encourages innovation, which benefits science, technology, and industry. With increased earnings, migrants are able to send financial support to family members back home.
Yeah, send the money back home.
This is critical to help reduce hunger and strengthen the resilience and sustainability of poorer communities.
Not to build them up, not to lift them up, not to help them where they are. No, it's to lift them up, make them rootless global citizens and move them to a new location. It will all be the same cities everywhere anyway. It doesn't really matter, right? But that's why my criticism of Corbett was like, well, you know, he was talking about how, you know, was it Pat Buchanan, was it that had talked about how, you know, with COVID-19 now we can finally, and there's partially, there are some wins that we can gain from analyzing the situation and use that throughout the event. Like, clearly having open borders have exacerbated the problem. Clearly, by not controlling these situations, it has led to X, Y, Z, et cetera. And we'll take those points and we'll use that to our advantage. However, how it's being used against us and what they're bringing in as the remedy is what is the poison, so to speak, against us.
Yeah.
But Corbett didn't bring this into the equation that, like, you know, they haven't brought in migrants to our countries just to make, and he actually kind of argued this in the video, that they have this open borders thing has been there just to make people, to get their idea of having borders strengthened, which is like, no, they're using ethnic replacement and also destabilization as a factor of why, for example, we need more surveillance. Our police is being more militarized, right? We have much more insecurity. There's a lot of social issues that arise from multiculturalism, multi-ethnic societies.
Because
and stuff
the
like.
Cities of any Western country.
That's just it. They've used it as a sledgehammer against Western society to break down the ethnic homogeneity so that we can't get together in a community as a people and rise up against it and fight back it. If there's no, you can't unify internally in a country, you have nothing, right? You can't do anything, right?
Exactly. So, and that's the point. Once you bring in these, you break down the society, you divide and conquer.
Yes.
By creating
absolutely.
False divisions.
Yep.
I mean, that video there is terrible. And if you notice how they're all, but what people need to realize about these videos, although they're all cartoony graphics and they've got that same kind of woman speaking on all of them, it's like the same. They are serious about what they're saying in there. Very serious. These are, if you Google those types, if you go into YouTube and look for those types of videos, nearly every corporation in the country is making videos just like that.
Absolutely.
How they're going to be part of it. So you might get like an energy company saying what it's doing to create that.
Yeah.
They're all talking about this. And they're deadly serious. So when you put that as the thing there, I mean, look, none of that is sustainable.
No,
we know
it's
that
not.
As well. It's all not. Selling you a dream anyway. I mean, how can take Britain, for example, how can you keep shipping people to Britain sustainably? Sustainably. We're a small island. When are we full, right? Or what do we have to do then? We have to, as you said earlier, move into these smaller pods. Like we had, if you were on benefits here in the UK, suddenly, say somebody, as we were talking earlier, you were living at home with your partner and suddenly they died and you had a two-bedroom house, you got penalised on your benefits, right? And they're trying to bring in systems like this. So elderly that once lived in a house with two people, once somebody dies, they get penalised. They've got to be shipped off to a little flat now because they are on state benefits to a point because they'll be on a pension. They've got to go to a flat because that house needs to be in used for a family of two, but also they were saying things like sharing houses with different people.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
It was getting ridiculous. So basically, soon it would be like there'd be bedroom taxes. Like
absolutely.
In ancient times, they used to have window taxes, right? Yeah. They'd be like, oh, well, you've got an extra bedroom than you need, so you can have it, but here you've got to pay more. But the only reason that in the West we're having these problems is because we're actually asked our populations are generally actually flatlined. They're not going up or down if you look at a lot of Western countries.
Yeah, right.
So the only reason we've got all of these problems is because they're shipping people into other countries whose populations are booming, like Africa's population, which is booming at the moment, because all of these corporations, the masses of aid and money, I mean, with climate change. You remember when they first started talking about the climate change bill going back quite a few years now? One of the main things that they passed in the UN was the redistribution of wealth. What it was basically saying is all the Western countries are going to pay Africa, give Africa money as a sorry for effing up the planet, essentially.
I mean,
it wasn't achieving anything. It wasn't changing the situation. It was like, yeah, we've effed up the planet as the Western countries, so here, third world, have money.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of the whole basis. And there were people at the time going, hold on, this doesn't solve anything, though. This is like going, but this was part of what we're seeing now, putting more this redistribution of wealth. And they mean it, guys. I want people to really understand that. They mean this redistribution of wealth. They mean it. And that means
absolutely.
That you,
yeah.
The average wage in the world is like probably like $1 a day. So if you're earning any more than that, if they bring that up to $2, you come down to $2.
Right? Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, no, this, the complete equalization, right? Equity.
Yeah.
They just, you know, and if someone is slightly taller, you chop off their legs. That's how you do it. And you create, you know, equal people. If someone is a little bit too talented, you knock them down a couple of pegs, so that,
exactly.
So no one feels discriminated against because they can't perform as well or whatever it is, right? Anyway, let me take
a couple more.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, you go.
I just want to take a couple of more of your chats here, guys. I don't so we don't leave you guys out because I do appreciate it. So Herbert sent his last one there. Tesla cars are tracked, can be turned off remotely, and he said, "I love Tesla." Tesla speed, but that was the reason I didn't buy one. Well, absolutely. Herbert again says, we must make choices, i.e. buy phones with removable battery. And he continues in another diamond. He says, for example, last flagship phone with removable battery was an LG V20. I haven't heard about that. But there are things like Pocket Block It, and I mean, you can essentially, I know supposedly some of these, they actually save the GPS data, and then once they're back online again, they send it all up or something. They found some ways around it or whatever.
About that, actually,
yeah.
In the UK, where somebody found all this tracking data in their phone that was just being backed up.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter if you turn it off or something like that. But I get the point, Herbert. I appreciate your input on that and your support as well. He ends up a subscription as well, a resub for a month. I appreciate that. John Saxa, 1418, sends a diamond, says, awesome show, guys. Very appreciated. Hail. Well, hail to you too. Jen Saxa, appreciate that. Pierce 777 sends 1-2 diamonds in a row. Appreciate that. I think we're caught up, ladies and gentlemen, on that. So let's, what are we looking at here in terms? We've talked about a lot of things, covered a lot of things here too, but
what
have we left out? We've talked about this image of what they're building, what they're trying to do. They're creating an infrastructure. They're creating through a medical emergency, essentially. Which again could be argued that it's a hyped medical emergency. We're dealing with something. I'm not trying to say we're not, but it's being used in such a way where they're hyping it, and the media is helping to kind of spin up this massive fear and panic around it. And we've talked about the fact that that doesn't help in terms of actually keeping people well. They need to go outside. They need to exercise. They need to have a social life. These are all things that helps you to stay healthy and normal, essentially. And so now we have a fallout. A lot more people that have prior complications, they are ending up dying of these for multiple different reasons. That's deaths that they can use. It kind of goes around. Actually, let's do this to continue. This is what we can do.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your video again and play it, the other two portions that I had outlined, because those are there's some good stuff there, and they can trigger some pretty good discussion here too. Let's go forward to 123. We're actually almost right there. So let's play this portion here, guys. Listen to this here.
At least Western nations and countries bordering China, with huge populations like India, seem largely unaffected. Despite all of the above, the fear train still keeps rolling. Whilst predicted death counts keep dropping, the lockdowns keep getting longer, and media outlets continue to spread hysteria instead of reasoned reporting. There are even some that still believe the governments are not doing enough, and that banks and big corporations desperately wish these lockdowns to end, so they can send everyone back to work to save the economy. But are we to believe then that these police-enforced sanctions are only in action because the people demanded them? That governments suddenly started listening to the will of the people over big business? And where do you think that 2.2 trillion, which is $2,200 billion in aid promised by the US Senate, will end up? I very much doubt it will find itself in the pockets of small businesses and others that are hit hardest by such a global recession. And I'm pretty certain the big multinationals will be left when the dust settles unlike many of their smaller competitors. And as for the banks, who do you think is giving out the loans? Willful ignorance has overtaken many. And like all good cons, the conned, not willing to have their judgment called into question, double down and defend the con man as if it were himself. But despite my own speculation here, and whether you think this event does have the potential to kill millions, despite the questionable numbers, in the end, it boils down to one simple question. What rights and freedoms are you willing to give over to government for the notion of safety? Governments that have...
Very good point right there. Let me play one other portion here, 2518. I think that goes into a little bit of the technology as well. That's a good portion. And then I have a clip to underline that. You lifted out Amazon a little bit there, too. That's an important thing of who benefits, who's the big winners right here. But here's a portion. Check this out here. It's a good
false portion. Promise of safety.
What do you say to those folks who are making the claim without really any evidence that these deaths are being padded, that the number of COVID-19 deaths are being padded?
You will always have conspiracy theories when you have very challenging public health crises. They are nothing but distractions.
Conspiracy theories, doctor? So you're engaging in conspiracy theories. What do you say to Dr. Fauci tonight?
Well, I would remind him that anytime healthcare intersects with dollars, it gets awkward. Right now, Medicare has determined that if you have a COVID-19 admission to the hospital, you'll get paid $13,000. If that COVID-19 patient goes on a ventilator, you get $39,000, three times as much. Nobody can tell me after 35 years in the world of medicine that sometimes those kinds of things impact on what we do.
It's not as bad as I think.
Yeah. It's strange. I don't want to say one way or another tonight.
But I see on TV that, you know, it's chaos.
You know, everything you see on TV is something.
I'm going to switch it.
I'm on the trauma center down at Kings County. The deaths that we're seeing, everybody who dies has coronavirus on their death certificate. Everybody who ends up having anything to do with coronavirus on their death certificate. And we're bringing in a bunch of people from out of town. We have doctors coming in from Nebraska who don't know what the hell they're doing. A lot of people die because of it. I don't know if it's coronavirus or if it was just a breakdown of the health system and we finally scared ourselves to shit this. It's very bizarre and I don't want to comment on it.
I don't want to comment on it. That's right. The interesting clip there. And we've seen those kinds of things too. Actually, there are some health workers that have spoken out. They've said things and they're like, you know, we've seen hospitals that, as you said before, they're just doing their dance numbers and shit like this instead. It's very strange. Interesting that they said that they bring in doctors from Nebraska. I presume that was a clip out of New York. And he said, it's chaotic. We don't really know what's going on with that. So very strange, huh?
Yeah. I mean, those clips there you saw with the money as well. And like, I just want to explain, this is a good point with the money that I should have probably put in the documentary that people don't really understand. It's like a lot of people go, how's everybody going along with this, right? Surely there'd be a lot more people speaking out against it. Well, imagine you run a small hospital somewhere and you're getting this incentive just by putting COVID on the death certificate, just by saying that they've got COVID-19. Now, you could see, for instance, where a good man who needs some extra incubators for babies, right, but he hasn't got the funding, could see an opportunity here just by putting COVID there to get some extra cash so then he can later use to build incubators. And all he's got to do is write one word. Yeah. It doesn't affect his treatment of the patient. It doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
But he's just going to write that one word on that document. Now, so you can see here how people... good people could go along with it, especially when you bring cash into everything, as we know, it changes the situation quite drastically, right? And I just want to put that out because a lot of people don't understand how things work when you think you're doing the greater good. I mean, look at the health professionals at the moment. They're being treated as essentially gods at the minute. I mean, people excusing them dancing in hallways, in ICU wards. I mean, these are... Now,
and then people are at home, they can't replace, you know, they're in pain. Yeah. They're like, they can't replace their knee or have a surgery for it, replace like urgent things that they have got going on. And they're seeing these people dancing away. They're having a great time. Yeah. It's obviously like choreographed. I mean, it's a minor point, but it's like they're choreographed. It took them like a while to do some of this shit. It's amazing.
My argument is any job I've ever been in, if I started getting my camera out and getting all my mates together on the job to do a dance, I'd be sacked. I don't know about anything
else. Wiley was like supposedly the biggest whatever issue that your company would be dealing at the time. They've never had so many cases. There've never been so many fulfillment of orders or whatever it is, right? Like, and but what do you do? Let's do a choreographed dance number because things are doing
somebody,
great.
A friend of mine pointed out racial consciousness actually from he actually pointed out that, you know, PPE to me when in conversation with him, PPE, the protective gear that they wear, once you take it outside, it's no good. You have to throw it away.
Right.
I've seen loads of videos where they're outside in the streets celebrating, clapping.
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
They've got a PPE shortage at the moment. But
not social distancing either, by the way. They're all outside congregating and shit like that, right?
Oh, I mean, here we had at Westminster Bridge, it was public, police, and ambulance workers mass congregating on Westminster Bridge to all clap. And I did a little tweet about it where I said, they don't even believe it.
Right.
They're coming. They send a drone out to follow somebody in a remote area in the UK while they're walking their dog. but then they all get together because they're special. They're heroes.
Exactly. Absolutely. These are the new. Well, the scientists are like the high priests, right, of this new order that they're building, and the medical workers are. I don't know, like the clergy, or I don't know what you're translated to, but it's essentially it's some kind of new weird cult that they're building with this, you know, health, medical, science.
Science, tech, we see this, you know, we see it with, like I say, this is why I'm more now, and put it together with Brave New World, because it's this idea of absolute convenience is what they're trying to sell when we know it's going to be anything but.
Yeah, there was a clip that... let me see if I can find that real quick too, because it was interesting. Where he speaks about that, the Neil deGrasse Tyson, of all people, he's talking about, will we listen to the scientists, right? Is this one? Yeah, here it is. Listen to this. And I hope it's in the beginning of it here. Cause it's like, this is kind of the mentality that we're talking about here. Let me see if you...
Gentlemen, my first guest tonight is the director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American...
I'm going to go forward a bit here.
That's up. How many astrophysicists do you know? If I'm your favorite, I don't even know what that means.
I don't want to know any others, Neil.
Should be coming here.
I don't remember my old girlfriends. I don't remember the old astrophysicists before I met you.
Go forward here.
Geologist, but I suspect...
I'm an astrophysicist, Jim.
I suspect you have an opinion.
A point of view, I would say. So I'm broadly scientifically literate, but what I will say of this virus, I think we're in the middle of a massive experiment worldwide.
Where's the guinea pigs?
Maybe. The experiment is, will people listen to scientists?
That's right. That's the one, right? Yeah. Will they listen? And then you can have people like Neil Ferguson, right? Because he's a scientist. And he did these models. And it's a study.
It's a scientific model, right?
And of course, it wasn't peer-reviewed. It didn't run through the regular channels. It was, the reason why the Swedish epidemiologist, he just said, this is garbage, we're not doing this, it hasn't been peer-reviewed, whatever. But that's science. So you can't refute it, right? You can't have a different view. It's science. It's objective truth, no matter what you call it. And then you realize, well, there are other people that are dissenting. There are other studies that prove that the study was biased. It's like, there's other things. You can't just throw out, well, it's science, and then that settles the matter. That's not how this works. You know what I mean?
No, and science is a question and repeating the same. You know, you must repeat it over and over again and get the same results. And like you say, whenever you look at anything, people go, the NHS was science. But the government gets loads of data brought to it every year, and it chooses what it's going to go with. Now, that doesn't mean that what it's chose is the right decision. It just means that scientist said this. But there's another scientist, like you said, that has a complete opposite perspective in many cases.
Yeah.
I mean, look at a great one for this is climate change. How many different scientists in different fields said, hold on, we don't think this is happening, but screw you, science. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our scientists say. So that's what's going to happen.
Yep, that's right.
Science is not... a lot of things are disputed at the moment, especially when you're talking predictive models. Yeah, like with, as you said, with the pandemic, this so-called pandemic, and with climate change.
I mean, did you see this, by the way? Let me just mention real quick here. They call it the Kung Flu hockey stick. Now, the hockey stick was associated with the bad climate change stuff, right, that the IPCC still are pushing, right? It was the report they released a couple of years ago now was 0.5 degrees, whatever. We're all going to die if we don't, you know, reverse this, blah, blah, blah. But then you realize that whole climate model was based, of course, on faulty and shitty data that came out from, that was exposed back in 2010. East Anglia University was the climate research unit, CRU. The emails were exposed where they were saying, don't, you know, yes, we know the numbers are wrong, or but you skew it in the way that it blah, blah, blah. Even the temperature readers they had placed on parking lots outside of vents to buildings and all this kind of weird shit that led to a drive up of the average temperature. Yeah. But that's still the science that we are getting that we need to base the reformation of our world on, right?
Well, what they mean by science is government push science. Just as we said earlier, we touched on it a little bit with the YouTube videos. You go to YouTube, it would give you a link at the bottom telling you, no, this is what's really going on. Here's the Wikipedia page. I mean, of all things, it links a Wikipedia page, right? But here's the official narrative. And if you don't agree, so don't listen to this guy here, whatever he's talking. And it could be a scientist making a video, but he still hears the link to the official narrative. Like I say, it's government pushed. And government use what they want. Power corrupts, and ultimate power corrupts completely.
Yeah.
People don't want to lose power. And these people, what you talk about with the video there where we said, like, the big business, at the end of all of this, whatever they're talking about finances, there's still going to be a McDonald's and a Starbucks.
Yes, absolutely. There might be a couple of branches might close temporarily, but at the end of the day, it's, as I've said before, but it's Mia's Diners, it's mom and pop's restaurant that's going to close down, and small business owners are going to lose it.
How long can they last? How long
they can't.
You know, I
they're not going to get the bailout money.
They're not, and they haven't got the lawyers to get what they should get, etc. They get all the money. I mean, look at the banks. I mean, you mentioned that video there. The banks caused the financial crisis, the last financial crisis.
Yeah.
They were the ones that our government bailed out.
Yep.
They left us with our tax money. So the government, the banks screw us over. Our governments give our money to the banks, and we're left sitting there going, on, hold on. People lost their homes, foreclosures. And we may see something like that happen again with this, as they do another power grab. What people need to understand about these depressions is that's almost the reaping, the harvest, right? They've let you build up your wealth.
Yeah.
They come in, swipe it, take it back, let you build it up again. I mean, it's essentially harvesting human activity, harvesting human.
Yeah, it's your sweat equity that's being ripped away from your hands, and you're not the one who has it. And again, these are the people that will take it from you to redistribute it as they see fit.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, you will always get the top portion of society, of course, benefiting the most from it. But once that's done, it's about equalizing a permanent substrata of people that are all just equal, and then you have an elite guard, and it's not going to be a good elite, folks. It's not going to be some fashy these are going to be your absolute worst enemies possible, and they will be ruthless in the suppression of us.
I mean, look at all these corporations, how they've took anti-white policies. Look at the governments, their anti-white policies. Look at the celebrities. And these are the three main groups that are pushing this. We've got celebrities, corporations, and government all telling us this is going to be wonderful.
Okay? Yeah, just do what we tell you to do. Just do what we tell you to do. Be a good little citizen. Obey. Get in the pod. Eat the bugs. Shut up. Take the shot. Bend over. And then everything will be good again. And you can go back to normal.
Lady Gaga's performing a concert for free on TV that everybody can watch all over the world. And now we've got 5G everywhere. Even this poor kid in Africa, right?
He can be part of it too. Yeah, we're all fighting the enemy together. It's just like, but we're at home, but we're fighting it together. Getting baked, totally irresponsible. Lying on the couch, you're a hero now. You know what I mean?
You're under police arrest, but it's good for you.
Absolutely good for you. Check this out regarding, we talked a bit briefly about the rich and the powerful. Bezos, I played this in another show, but good repeating. Here we go. Check this out.
Combined net worth of the 500 richest people in the world has increased by 20%. Since its low on March 23rd, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Mark Zuckerberg, among others, are the real winners of the pandemic. Meanwhile, 22 million Americans are newly unemployed. Jeff Bezos was already the world's richest man before the pandemic hit, but with everyone staying at home, he's now roughly $24 billion richer. His wife has seen her net worth vastly increase as well. And at this point, Amazon has reached an all-time high of its stocks on Tuesday, valued at market over $1.1 trillion.
One thing we've learned from the COVID-19 crisis is how important Amazon has become to our customers. We want you to know we take this responsibility seriously, and we're proud of the work our teams are doing to help customers through this difficult time.
Thank you, Jeff. You're a real
bro. Business is booming. 75,000 new employees in Amazon warehouses are being hired, in addition to the 100,000 that were hired over the past month. They are called heroes by Amazon as they take great risk of exposure in order to bring in Bezos' billions.
All right, right now. Delivering the things
they have
people
this
need.
Cheesy like commercial about how important their workers are and all that kind of shit, right? But let me, Amazon, right?
That's a great clip though, just showing you how well the wealthy are doing here. They're not,
exactly.
They're not suffering at all.
No. Who's benefiting?
Because that's $2.2 trillion that Trump's promised is going to come out of U.S. taxpayers' money to pay back that debt.
Listen,
it's probably going to companies like Amazon.
When we go to the store and we're going to buy food for our kids and try to put food on the table, we're the ones that are going to see increased food prices. We're the ones that are going to see increased prices everywhere because nothing is ever free. The money is debt, right? And eventually this debt bubble is going to explode. But Amazon, I mean, it's true. Look at their logo, right? It's all in their logo from A to Z. They're going to be the blanket coverage. That's what it's about there.
Yeah.
It's a smiley face. This is the servitude that Huxley talked about. We'll play that clip here out too in a little bit.
Yeah.
But you'll love this. This is going to be great for us. We're going to be, put on the VR headset. We'll be able to sit at home. We'll get the, free bug juice, just intravenously, whatever. Everything is going to be supplied for. You're going to be happy. You're going to be asking for this. It's going to be 5G everywhere. It's going to be good entertainment, pornography at hand. All these wonderful things, right? We live in transnational Amazon fulfillment centers, and we'll live and work in them in the future.
Right, by the end of this lockdown, we wonder why we ever went out.
Exactly. What was the point? What was the point anyway? It's interesting that, even 12 Monkeys talked about that, right? Remember that movie that Terry Gilliam, they drove them down in the underground to protect them against this kind of stuff. And there was a couple of good lines in there where they said, like, it was never about the virus. It was never about, like, the pandemic. It was about getting people to submit, to control people. That's what it was about. Yeah. And that's how they're using it too, in a sense, right? Oh boy. Yeah, let's play that clip, too. That could be a good thing. We've been going here for quite a while. It's been an excellent show. Let's play that, because that could potentially kind of lead us out here. It's right at the end. So, this is coming up here right here. Check this out, guys.
In your new essays, you state that these various enemies of freedom are pushing us toward a real-life, brave new world, and you say that it's awaiting us just around the corner. First of all, can you detail for us what life in this brave new world that you fear so much, or what life might be like?
So it's Monday morning here in D.C. as we wake up to this brave new world.
Now, I think what is going to happen in the future is the dictators will find, as the old saying goes, that you can do everything with bayonets except sit on them. That if you want to preserve your power indefinitely, you have to get the consent of the ruled. And this they will do, partly by drugs, as I foresaw in Brave New World, partly by these new techniques of propaganda. They will do it by bypassing the sort of rational side of man and appealing to his subconscious and his deeper emotions and his physiology even. And so making him actually love his slavery. I mean, I think this is the danger, that actually people may be, in some ways, happy under the new regime.
When it comes to coronavirus, time takes on new meaning. So much is so rapidly changing, it seems overwhelming, almost impossible to keep up. In Australia today, we are right on the edge. While COVID-19 is certainly not under control here, so far, it's not out of control. But as global health experts keep warning us, it could happen at any moment unless we all drastically change the way we currently live.
Yeah, that's right. That's how you end the first part there. Very, very good. Excellent stuff. Yeah, and obviously there is a painful period now. It's not that people love this servitude that's here, mm-hmm. but it's this idea you take, you know, two step forward, one back, right? You still always advance, but we're in the state stage right now, where it is painful, and people, they want to go, they're going to go to bars, they want to go to concerts, they want to go to sporting events, they want to do all these things again, and they're kind of, they will use this to essentially bribe us into the situation of accepting the things that they need us to accept before we're allowed to go back again. And once we do, we'll be like, thank God that's over. It's not so bad with the tracking, and it's not so bad having to have mandatory vaccines. At least I can hang out with my mates again and drink beer at the pub, you know?
And it won't be at first. What they do is when they employment it, they never push it as far as it can. And like I say, it might just be everybody's allowed out, but certain bars, this is where the neoliberal mass capitalism aspect comes in. A bar could go, well, you need a vaccine to be able to come into our bar because that's what we've decided. Well, ID 2020 also has a lot of Bill Gates' hands in it. They've already run tests on this with ID, but with the apps, you might even be able to use apps now. So rather than that, you can have all your information on the app. So when you walk into the bar, it says, I've been vaccinated, I'm fine to go, you're allowed in. You haven't been vaccinated, you're not allowed in. So they get you, not people think that they're going to come in with a jackboot and smash you down and force you. They won't. In my opinion, they're going to get you by convincing you that this is good for you and you want it. And you'll do it anyway. How many people already do things like this? There's a government app now that if I put all my details in, whenever I go onto a government website in the UK, if I want a passport, I don't need to add my details anymore. I can just, the app does it for me.
That's right. Yep.
They're already doing everything we said. If you actually take a good look around you, it's already there. Because this is not just governments. This is corporations that are going to be heavily involved in pushing this.
Yeah.
And people, and that's how it's going to catch you off guard, because you're going to go, I chose something I wanted to mention about China, because people at the moment say it's government enforced. It's not. There's trials around. There's no national model yet. And actually, in many of these models that they're testing, they're voluntary. And why would you might go, well, I would never sign up for that. Well, I saw this one video where there's this lady and she's showing what she gets because she's got a high score, right? She's a very good citizen. She could buy a house and not have to pay a deposit, right? So she's gone, well, I want to join in because that can help me out. So the one end of this credit score will be incentive, right? If you're trusted, well, you can go rent something and you don't have to pay up for it. You have all these things. Whereas if you're at the bottom, you can't even order a train ticket.
Right.
To get out of your town. So, and this is what I think people really need. This is the scariest thing about the China model in some of their models. People are volunteering to do it.
Yeah.
This is not, they're not forcing them. They're going, well, there's, you volunteer, join up. You get to listen to Lady Gaga's next concert for free, right?
It's
like that, incentives.
Yeah, it's planned helplessness. It's Sweden has done this for a long time too, just in terms of like social engineering, that you essentially plan both society, but even like design wise, there are things you can do to force behavior to have a specific outcome, essentially, right? And the same thing would be here, that if there's enough blockages and things that are set, it's not impossible, but it's inconvenient. So then you choose to do the thing that they want to do, you know? So.
Yeah, that's how they've showed with China. Look, we still have that global citizen. There's all that big concept. Come on, sign up and get your friends to sign up.
And
how many did? I don't know. Probably millions across the world, right, did.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Completely oblivious. They wanted to listen to these big celebrity acts do a concert, so they just signed up. Why not? I mean, it's good, right?
It's perfect. It's perfect. Hey, guys, I'm going to take a couple of more of your super chats here, and then we'll wrap up here. It's been a great show. Proud Anne Frank denier sends a diamond, and says 88. Well, 88 to you, too. Appreciate that. JC Stalling sends a diamond. This is Hail Red Ice. Hail Mimish Brunner. Indeed. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate that. Another one from Techno Viking. So many people are experiencing headache right now. Figuratively, but maybe also literally. I'm not sure. But yeah, you're right. Thank you for that. Maternal Maiden sends a dominance. Global crisis, except for one group as usual. Well, exactly. And I mean, it's the ruling class. We've talked about this. Yeah. It's an international clique of people. that are running things, right according to plan, and they've told us what they're intended to do, and they're executing a lot of that now. Now, right at the end here, Phil, give us the websites, give us the social media things. I have essentially all the links here lined up that you sent to me, so go through those for us and let us know how people can watch your material, subscribe to your channels, and all that good stuff.
Well, obviously, this video, so if you want to look at the stuff related to this and more political stuff from us, that's Mimmer's Council. You can find that on YouTube just by typing in Mimmer's Council. We're also on BitChute, and we're also on Library. And that's the same for Mimmer's Brunner. You can just check that out. We're on Facebook with Mimmer's Brunner, and we're both on Twitter with Mimmer's Council and Mimmer's Brunner. And if you just type those in, it'll come up because we're the only ones with them. I'd like to do a little push with Libri, because with the age of censorship, Libri could be a way around that as a decentralized way. So, and I know you guys use it.
I think it's great. I think the quality is excellent. It's BitTorrent based. The guys there, they are aware of censorship on YouTube. There's obviously they're aware of these kinds of issues. They're actually very supportive. I like them. If they could do live streaming, they would be a massive threat to the contenders out there, you know?
Yeah, they are looking into it. There's a lot of things I've got. I mean, maybe not just yet, but maybe in a year or two, they look like they could be a big challenge to somebody like YouTube, which is what, because as more and more people are being kicked off YouTube, they need somewhere to go.
Yeah, and, definitely. BitChute is awesome, don't get me wrong, and they're working on live streaming too. We're big supporters of them. It's not that, but it's good to have a couple of options out there, because you never know what happens, and you know, it's good for those to compete too, because that spurs them on to advance improve their products continuously.
The main difference is, I think, with Libri is it's at the back end, it cannot be deleted. You cannot delete the videos because they're part of the blockchain. I don't understand it all, but so if they take the website down, you could theoretically access those same videos through, you could build another front end, as it were.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So you're.
Please subscribe to us over at Mimmer's Council, because that's a little bit lower than our Mimmer's Brunner. It's a bit of a new venture.
Have you been promoting that for a long time? I'm glad that you have so many followers, actually. Well, I mean, proportionally to like YouTubes and stuff, it's not that much, but for being an alternative, fairly new website, you have a good bunch over there.
We've been really pushing with Libri and done a bit of exclusive content. Some of our live streams that we do on YouTube, we actually put them exclusively, especially if we're talking about subjects that might. We did one about white genocide, for instance. We did it live on YouTube, but we archived it at Libri just to take away that risk that it could be reported after the fact.
Nice. Yeah, good approach. Yeah, definitely. No, check it out, lbry.tv, and then you just put a slash and an at Mimmer's Brunner. As you can see right there, that's the channel for that. And then, of course, as you said, too, Mimmer's Council is there as well, under that same name. We'll have all the links down below, guys. But definitely check out the video there, too, in full, because there are things we didn't get to here today, obviously, in the video. Really good on statistics and a lot of, going through kind of more methodically, actually, of like what we're looking at when it comes to the death statistics and all that stuff. So check out this video. We'll link all of this good stuff below, including your Twitter account. Are there other ways that people can support your work, Phil?
At the moment, only through Mimmer's Brunner. We have a you can go to our website, which is in the links, I think, through PayPal or Patreon. We're still on Patreon at the moment, but we're not too sure how long we'll last. But that's all through Mimmer's Brunner. So to donate, you have to go through there. At the moment, Mimmer's Council, we're operating with no donations because it's more of a community thing at the minute.
Okay, cool. So tell us about the upcoming parts that you have in the series you're working on. What was the next thing?
The next video is going to be about this death spike, because I've seen that used as a counter argument to some of the things that I've been putting out there. So like I said very early on in the show, I want to really break down these stats and look at these numbers. And we do hope to, it'll probably be a much longer piece where we really break down this digital authoritarianism and explain it, how they're doing it, how it's happening, and how we're already accepting it. So that's our plans at Mimmer's Council at the moment, and that's about as far as we've got, because this is actually unfolding live, and that was one of our problems in getting any. This last video that we wanted, the video that we're going to be getting out this weekend, the problem was, by the time I finished writing it, new stats were out that I had to then include. It's trying to keep ahead of the track on this, because so much new information is coming out all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, a couple of more here, guys, and then we're going to start wrapping up here again. All the links will be down below in the description, obviously not right now under DLive, but on the websites, redice.tv, redicemembers.com, also on BitChute, Library, VK, we'll add links and stuff like that down below. Yeah. I see that Kamo sends a diamond. It says, good job as usual. Henrik, thank you so much. Love to my people in chat. Absolutely. Thank you so much, everyone in chat joining us. Head of Art sends again a clip. We can take a look at this last thing. I haven't seen it yet. He says, fake stage protest. Now, we saw these, we saw the spin around the media. This is a kind of a thing we didn't talk about. We don't have to get into it now in depth. We could play this as the last thing here. But mm-hmm. we saw this thing where you did have the media, basically, well, these are, a lot of them were Trump supporters and stuff, but a lot of them, they're like, these are dumb right wingers. These are crazy people that are protesting, you know, the lockdown.
Protest, yeah.
Yeah. And we saw them like, you know, this is what they do, right? This is somewhat unrelated, but there was one poster with one guy standing around with like some big swastika, and it was Trump and Pence, you know, underneath. And so they go out and they do certain, yeah. you know, they stage certain things to be able to pick it up in the media and say, look at these dumb idiots. Like, and again, yeah. whether it's genuine or not, we don't know, but they go for the photo op, you know, kind of thing of what they need.
Oh, it's the same with conspiracy theorists or anything. They'll pick your loudest, most brash, and the one that's got the most idiotic ideas to represent.
Right.
To represent the whole. I mean, they generally, that's what they
do. That's what they do. Yeah, they got to have the straw man. Anyway, let's take a look at this. It's only 50 seconds long.
Hi. So y'all can see, what's this flag say here? It's definitely not. They're staging. I'm glad I got this. A stage media op. Look at that. Staged on Facebook Live. Don't publish it in your paper. You're a fraud. They just staged one of those medical pictures with the guy in his scrubs. I got it on camera. You're a fake.
Nice.
You're a fake.
But it was interesting. See how it's just the one guy that walks up really quick in the crosswalk? Let's take a look at that again.
What's this flag say here? It's definitely not.
It says for 1, 2, 3, 4,
yeah, 5.
Yeah. And the photographer, he stays for 5 seconds there and something goes on, right? It was the same thing with the lady in the car and like, go back to China or something she said. And she might have been sincere. Yeah. I'm not saying that, but it was like, do you know what I mean? It always has that like feel. It's the same thing that like you can have an anonymous Fed poster on Telegram that's like says some dumb shit and then like the media picks up on that and write articles. The white supremacist, I would have used the coronavirus to like.
Video there, they could probably sell that, right? That's got value in this current crisis, right?
So yeah.
If you stage that little scenario there, right, you can sell it to a media. They'd probably give you a few grand you could get paid for. Staging something like that. So there's financial incentive for people to take these raw videos, right? These and then sell them to a news agency. It's just going to lap it up at the minute.
Let me see if I can find one thing here. We'll do one last thing here that we saw. It was actually James Freeman. I played a clip with him yesterday, but there is a look at this here. This section in here. He's a cool guy. He's kind of a little. Well, he questions authority. Let me just leave it at that. There's a lot of other layers to that you go through. But he's he's at one of the hospitals and stuff, and he catches something interesting when they have a similar photo shoot because they have these things like as you said before, the health workers, there are heroes, and you know all that kind of stuff, right? But let's check this out here.
That we have rights, that changes the game up quite a bit, right? We don't have rights in the first place.
Let me just go forward a bit. Here we go. There's a cut.
To hold up the illusion that you have rights. And the majority of the public are okay with it because they think that it's for their safety.
Here, look at this.
So we've got this other news crew over here. And they're allowed to be here. And, I mean, you want to talk about bias, being biased towards different media outlets. This is it right here. Oh, they're just doing a photo shoot.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, this is all like just, this is a commercial. This is like an ad, you know?
Yeah, basically. It's propaganda.
If Mexican beer boat
is so dangerous and non-essential businesses need to be closed, why, when I was on my way here from Texas, did I see a ton of traffic stops for petty traffic violations, whether it's speeding or failure to signal, cops walking up and making contact with individuals over petty traffic violations. If the threat is so real, I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it seems as if they're forcing the public to change their way of life based on the threat while the government changes nothing. Shut down your businesses, all your private businesses, shut them down. You guys can't go to work, you can't make money. Oh, don't worry, Daddy will give you money. Daddy will give you money. The government will take care of you. Just do as we say and stop working.
That's
stop
right.
Producing.
Yep.
Stop being productive.
Yep. That's right. All right, so he caught that. And so this is how I found out about this guy was that I saw this on Twitter, and then someone gave me what his real name was. Check this out. We'll wrap up on this. So I played it in the last stream, but it's funny. 2 minutes long. He's the kind of guy who's like, you know, he questions cops and shit, like what they do. It's funny, if nothing else. Check this out here.
Who are you?
I'm Detective Mike Jardine.
Oh, yeah? What are you working on?
It doesn't matter what I'm working on. I'm asking you, what are you doing here taking pictures?
Where have you been today? Have you been here all day, or have you been out and about a little bit?
What is this about? Who are you?
I'm asking the questions. Where have you been today?
No,
have you been here?
I'm asking the questions. You're on this property. You're on this property, so you need to answer my questions.
Are you drunk? Why are you slurring your words today? Have you been to the bar today at all?
Who are you?
Have you been to the bar today?
Who are you?
I'm an investigator.
Investigator for who?
Investigative journalist at all.
Working on a fraud case. That's
okay.
Where I've been.
Okay. Have you been to the bar at all today?
No.
Okay. You got any drugs on you? Have you used any drugs today?
What a ridiculous question.
That's not a ridiculous question.
Deputy Hannis, you know who this guy is?
Do you know where he's been today?
I don't keep tabs on him.
Okay.
I've been out and about.
Do you know what time his shift started?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. Does he usually drink on the job, or... No? not that anybody knows of for sure. Have you guys ever breathalyzed him while he's been on the job? Would you submit to a breathalyzer for me right now?
You're ridiculous. You know that?
Your name.
You've got about 5 minutes to get out of here right now.
Or what?
Or what? You're on...
My property.
This isn't your property.
Shut the hell up. Get out of here now.
What'd you say?
I said shut up and get out of here.
No, you get out of here now.
Hey, you better get your boy. Get your butt back in your office and do your job.
You shut up and get out
of here. You get your butt back in your office and do your job. You get your ass back in there. You don't look back here again. I'll be watching you. You are now under investigation.
All right, that's it. All right, very funny. A lot of funny stuff. A lot of things you could say about that. But yeah.
I think the guy was drunk, man, and that's why he didn't know what to do.
I don't know. It's kind of funny. But yeah, we have a lot of people that are following orders, and they're just submitting and obeying and shit like that. It's always good to put out some questioning out there, so I'm not putting that down. All right. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much, Phil, or Mimish Bruno, as you're known as, again.
Yeah.
It was fantastic having you here. Thank you to everyone in chat for joining us as well. Hope you enjoyed the show. One last, I see came in here from Techno Viking. He says, thank you for the good stream. Good job. Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it. All right, Phil, take care. We'll see you guys later. We'll stay in touch, okay? We'll have you back on the show soon. Keep up the good work.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, absolutely. And thank you, everybody, as well, for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Stay safe out there. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow. Flashback Friday, we have Mark Collette joining us, or Collette, as you actually say. I've been accustomed to saying Collette for some time, but Mark Collette will be joining us for Flashback Friday, co-hosting, and then Sunday we'll actually have Lana back for Weekend Warriors, so if you missed her, definitely tune in to redicemembers.com on Sunday evening. We'll have a new Weekend Warrior out as well, but yeah, everybody, stay safe, stay calm, think about these kinds of issues, right, and we'll see you next time. Stay safe.